Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Gianna Rayburn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Hi, Nikki. Welcome to the Returnix podcast.
Hey, Lauren. Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
So happy to have you here. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am a romance author of Pride and Protest, Sex, Lies, and Sensibility, and now just recently, The Princess and the P.I. I'm a cultural anthropologist. I'm also like, I'm just a walking version of that humanities course you're forced to take in college. That's who I am.
Yes, I love your Substack because you actually take some like bits of information and actually expand it upon and gives us a different point of view to look at. Where a lot of times we're just consuming like pop culture information. So actually look at this lens, look at this other lens. So I really appreciate your takes and to look at it as a cultural anthropologist. It's a better way to approach it. There's a lot to be explored in this era. I think history books, I don't know America, because America education is not that good. I come from Puerto Rico, and I was telling a bunch of people, because I'm from the island, and with the whole Bad Bunny situation, everyone's like, oh, deport. I was like, we've been a colony for 100 years. They won a war. But I was explaining to a lot of people, the amount of people that asked me, what kind of passport do I have and what kind of passport do we need? I was like, this is not. And I was like, it's education. I was like, well, it's American education. They don't teach you that basic stuff. So what's interesting is like, I come from Puerto Rico. My education was both Spanish. I come from bilingual language. So I learned Spanish to learn English. I read the classics, American classics or English classics, as well as the Spanish classics. So I read Don Quixote, Gabriel García Márquez, and I have a pretty well-rounded education, which a lot of people don't think of it. They just assume that we're third world country. I assume when we look back at 2025 or 2016 to 2025 era, they're going to be like, what's going on? So your work might be uncovered. We're interested at that.
Oh my gosh, I hope so. It's also incredibly optimistic of you to stop that era at 25. Like, I'm really
interested. I'm waiting for it. I don't want to say it. Like, the clock is going to stop when it stops. It can't be worse than bad.
Oh my gosh. Who pressed hail on this elevator?
I don't know. But let's go with Sense of Visibility and Pride and Protest, which are your Dan Alcer retelling DMB. A little touch of cultural. Let's bring it back to the 2020s and era. What led you to write these retellings, and what was important for your voice to come out from taking this text and adapting it to this era that we live in?
No, that's a great question. I think particularly when I was starting Pride and Protest, I was still doing a lot of research on aesthetics and power, which is kind of what we find beautiful and why, and what's kind of associated with and attached to notions of beauty. And something that we found in some of the data that, like, I think OkCupid released was that Black women and Asian men were like the least responded to in dating apps. They were presumed to have like kind of less sexual capital. And because of that, there were these associations with masculinity and femininity that a lot of Black women and Asian men like struggle with. I'm saying all this to say that I was always a Jane Austen fangirl. And when I started thinking about retelling a Jane Austen novel, I'll very intentionally put this Black woman and Asian male as these kind of archetypical heroes. Because what would happen if you made Elizabeth Bennet witty, delightful, desirable, a Black woman from around the way, D.C., like Southeast, right? And what would happen if you made brooding, handsome, rich, powerful Mr. Darcy an Asian male? What has to change? What can stay the same? And it started as me asking myself those questions, and then I loved it. And the people responded as well, so.
Yeah, and we love it. We love when we're telling that it brings up to light, like, new lenses to look at it. New lenses to look at this classical text and to look at it from a critical perspective at the same time, adapting to where we live now. and questioning the biases that we have, perceived biases when we think about these characters from the get-go, and be like actually exploring that beyond and actually having what we find in romance is to find empathy, to find common sense or commonality, or find ways to look at the world differently.
Mm-hmm.
What's important about reading romance is not just about the red flags that we listen to. It's helpful to see all the red flags and be like, okay, maybe not in my personal life, but also to look at how other people view the world. And it's a safe space to explore that. And so I love this take on Pride and Protest and the Sense of Sensibility take on. But about The Princess of PI, which is one of my favorite books. And I tell you, because I like a little bit of action, mystery.
Oh, yeah.
Go for it. And at the same time, I don't like romantic suspense that are just like too dark. I like a little bit. I have PTSD, so I don't need more triggers to be at.
Yeah.
So this is, it takes an amateur sleuth. It takes Reddit. It takes a PI. It actually, a common ground of trying to take down something to go for it. And that's very technological, very, very relent to this time. So talk elevator pitch and what did you enjoy about writing this book?
Oh, I love writing this book because I'm really fascinated by how people curate these hyper competent online personas.
Yeah.
Like Fiona's Reddit sleuthing. She's like, when you engage with her online, you would never imagine that she's unprepared for anything outside of her own living room. And there's such a distance between the person that we are online and like that individual that we create online and who we actually are. And I wanted to write someone with an enormous gap between that confident, knowledgeable person that they present online and literally having to ask permission to spend 20 minutes in conversation with someone at being 28 years old, right? And that tension, and then just like pair that with my love, enduring love for sexually competent dirtbags with a guilt complex, hashtag the bear, that I just knew that I wanted to put these two interesting people together to make them chase justice or see what would happen.
Yeah. So how did you plot this book? Did you plot the characters before that? Or was it the conflict, the external conflicts for the drivers or the co-factions or their personas? Like, what was how did the book came about? Because it's always curious too when you think about romance, it's a formula, but seeing there's different pieces of the, and you gotta figure out which one's the main driver that was the seed and then allowed the other things to spring forward.
No, you're exactly right. It started off being a completely different thing. I will tell you, it was just a kind of straight up mystery. And as I continued to write these characters, they started to unfold themselves to me. Tiny little details of their life that made the story that much more interesting, that made the story more interesting for me to tell. And because of that, I will say that I had a sketch, what I wanted the story to be and what I wanted it to be about, and a sketch of the characters. But in the writing, the characters deepen. In the writing, the characters push against certain ideas and lean into other ones. And sometimes when you follow that, when you honor that, where the characters want to go, you come up with a story that's even better than what you thought you were writing. There's so many instances where you write like the end and you look at it and say, oh, that's what I was writing the whole time. It sometimes comes at you in that order.
Yeah. So I love the fact that Fiona is a Redditor.
Yeah.
An amateur sleuth. I've been a new cozy mystery, actually more mystery, emotional linear reader. And I work as a fraud analyst. I'm actually trained as an investigator. And
wow.
So it's like kind of like a fun, it's my day job. That's what I do. And so it's funny enough that a lot of my job takes place at home. It's not this sense like I'm chasing, I'm doing surveillance and stuff.
Yep.
And it's like a lot of it. It's like looking at data, looking at pieces of information, making a case. And so much of Reddit is about screenshots, receipts,
network
math. I clean up and murder wall and like connecting. And then see, you know how many times I spend online trying to get the universal information and then finding the whole web of connection. We have an online persona. If you don't have an online presence, that is a red flag.
Yep.
Like the amount of times I've heard the FBI from my area, say, read geotagging where you are so you know where to arrest you, because you're so dumb that you put all the cars and all the things that you bought with the fraud money and went to location. Now we know it's online persona. And so I love this, it's like idea, because we don't see that often in mysteries. We think it's like quirky characters and
charm. Yeah.
But it's no, it's a false.
This is like more recent in Fiona's initial kind of fundamental misconnection. And he's just, listen, I put my feet to the ground, and this, like, whatever internet thing you're playing at somehow isn't real. And she wins him over. He starts to say, okay, all right, okay, you're hot shit, congratulations. And but also she learns that aspect of reading people in real time and getting what she wants out of people that she talks to, which she needed to. Right. So they learned from each other. And I think they're the better for it.
It's awesome. So I appreciate it. This is like a love letter to me. I know you did not come with the new system, but I'm like, oh, my gosh, it's so what it does.
No, me too. Like, I grew up like Church of God in Christ, like pretty religious, like high control religious community.
Yeah.
And in that instance where you're talking about which thing came first, I definitely closed the book and said, oh, I was processing all of that body stuff and control stuff that I grew up with, having Fiona be this bosomy girl and having to, like, the terror of your body growing into something that might be sexually desirable, and how people treat that, how mothers and aunties and uncles and dads treat that as something that needs to be managed, covered immediately. And I wanted Fiona to speak to that.
Well, I think it's like, yeah, and I just have this in therapy, is the perpetrator acting like a victim and making the victim as a perpetrator.
Mm-hmm.
In ways of, oh, it's your fault. It's how you dress. It's how you do. You may not be the victim. I am the victim, but I'm the perpetrator.
Mm-hmm.
And it's patriarchy, misogynist, you know, cultural expectation, and a society that has tightened that out 10 notches more. And so I think it's a lot of it that connection with yourself and try to self-trust within yourself that you may not have been given to. And I think in a role like as an online sleuth, it's allow yourself to explore trusting your instinct, trusting your gut instinct, and trust yourself to be like, no, this is the raw and this is why. And I can give you the receipts and I can tell you why.
Yep.
And it's actually retraining your brain and actually allowing yourself to have power again. So yes.
Yes, no, that's exactly what you have done, is uncovered the entire theme, this notion of retraining your brain and taking the power back from a thing that had control over you. I mean, Maurice is a good detective, but he's also in the grips of guilt and rumination that has kind of stalled his career considerably.
Yeah.
And that ability to take control of your brain and tell the ghosts that haunt him, no, you can't come into this room. It was just a powerful moment for him as well.
Yeah. The brain is valuable. There is neuroplasticity. It's not fake science. I know the wellness, they're like, oh, yeah, change your brain. It is actually true. You can change your brain. It is not an easy thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a powerful thing of shifting exposure, getting out of your comfort zone, trusting yourself, trying to help your beliefs, trying to explore things a little bit further, and just getting to that place to acclimate. Many of you have symptoms, and that doesn't mean it's forever. It's like how to regulate your emotions or your symptoms to be your best self and to be open for love, because I think that's a bigger part. You may not be open for love because you feel like you have all this baggage that you have to deal with, and you may just think like it doesn't exist, or it doesn't. I have friends who were like, I don't think I'm loved, and I'm like, no, you're loved unconditionally, but you may see it. And I think in some ways that's where romance is very helpful for people who have that struggle, to see that it's possible, to see that it is happening, have examples of healthier relationships and not unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Red flags galore. And that's what romance does. Romance is a great place to learn.
You're exactly right.
So this is deep. But let's talk about some good recommendations. What kind of books do you tend to read?
Oh, that's such a good question. I read so widely. I just scuba up everything that I could possibly think of. And right now I'm reading what I like to call like weird litfic. And this includes just incredibly angry women doing completely out of pocket things. Their eyes are the best part, right? Or Land of Milk and Honey. It's another great one that I just keep going back to. And Regina Black is a favorite of mine. And her work is relationship forward. But when we think about women doing amazing things, sometimes out of pocket, finding love, Regina Black can write a really out of pocket woman. And I love what she writes. So yeah, right now I'm in my bitch what era of reading, and I'm enjoying it.
I love this era, and I think it's just what we need.
Yeah.
Do you have any books you recommend our listeners to pick up, like after reading The Prison CPI? And it doesn't have to be romance. It can be another genre altogether. So
I will always recommend Regina Black's August Lane. I love it. You ball, you get a little spicy. It's great. S.A. Crosby, King of Ashes was really good. Love a crime drama. I was really trying to get him to blurb the book. I was just, let's get weird. But we never got in contact, but I would have loved that. I love S.A. Crosby. What else was that? Oh my gosh, Alex Harrow. Alex Harrow is one of my favorite authors. She can put a sentence together that just makes you turn the book down and say, I'm going to take a break. I'm going to take a break from writing. I'm going to take a break from breathing. I love the way she writes. I love the way she strings words together.
Yes. Oh, these recommendations are awesome. And Regina Black is like an evergreen recommendation that you just keep doing. And we just keep her writing. Your life is yours. So she's publishing books.
Yes, please.
So just like you, we want to make your life easier so you can keep publishing books.
I love it.
Awesome. Mickey, tell us where to find you online.
You can find me on Instagram is where I'm at most often, at Nikki Payne Books. I'm also on TikTok, Nikki Payne Romance, so I'm just goofing off. And also on Substack, on the Painful Truth Substack, where I take cultural phenomena or social phenomena and sometimes just build it with an anthropological lens or a lens of romance and just doing stuff that I find really interesting. So those are three places you're most likely to find me.
I love this. Thank you, Nikki, for being on the show.
Thank you, Laura.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What You Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.